Welcome to Creating Cash Flow for August 15th, 2022. And we have a cash flow tiger here with such a good question, Karen. Okay, so I am going to read this whole thing because we need to have the full context, because this is really a tiger level question. And it is something that if you are leading groups, you will not be able to avoid this. Might be able to avoid it for a long time, but oh, it will come your way. Okay. So you're really the overall topic is like creating a safe space, vetting your workshop members. And Karen writes, I've been hosting quarterly 3-month writing workshops all year. I had 5 people signed up for summer, which started in July. Letting people in the group. 4 members were continuing into this group, and then there was 1 new person. Last week, the new person, we'll refer to her as B, let me know that she was leaving the group after 1 month of classes because she'd never felt safe. Group safety is a big priority for me. Before booking, I have everyone sign a contract, a confidentiality agreement, and I also share a slide at the beginning of every session that says the following: we all agree to be present to each other and to ourselves, to be open and allowing new ideas and points of view, and that everything we share and talk about will be kept confidential. Everyone in the group verbally agrees before we continue every time we meet. I said I felt I did keep a safe space within the workshop, and her continued attendance at the workshop confirmed that. And it's up to each person to just let me know if they felt unsafe. So I asked her, what made you feel unsafe? She reluctantly mentioned that she had contacted another group member outside of the workshop. Now, Karen writes, I don't give out email addresses and I don't encourage this. I told her that I'm not responsible for anything that happens outside of the workshop space. Still, she said what had transpired made her lose 4 nights of sleep and fear for her safety, and therefore she can't return to the group. Now, I've been working with the other members for 1 to 2 years, so I'm not sure I know them. I have a history with them, so I'm not sure what could have happened. She wouldn't tell me what happened or who she was referring to, but because I don't want her leaving bad reviews, I went against my written policy and gave her a partial refund and ended her access to the classes. So now I have 4 people in the group. Each month, participants submit written pages for group feedback. Everyone is working on a book-length project, so they submit a chapter. Jay, we'll refer to this member as Jay, submitted what appeared to be a partial account of her encounter with B. It was still unclear what happened, except that Jay had arranged to visit B at her home and was bringing gifts. I emailed Jay that I'm not comfortable workshopping a piece about a former member in the group. Jay seemed to want her side to be known, and I would prefer to keep the entire conversation out of the group. It has nothing to do with the other members who are focused on their own work and behaving in a professional manner. I've decided to add this clause to my contract. Your email address will not be shared. Outside contact is at the sole discretion of participants. Visionary Writing Workshop bears no responsibility for what transpires between participants outside of the workshop space. I'm still embroiled in this. I know this is a quote learning opportunity, and I'm not even sure what my questions are, but here's what's coming up for me. And we're going to talk about each one of these. Going forward, my workshops may be invitation only. How can I vet people to keep the crazy out? This drama is taking up a lot of my time and energy, which has nothing to do with me. I will probably not have space for Jay in my fall session in October, but what can I say to her now? I have a private Zoom scheduled with her tomorrow. I want to ask what happened and who initiated contact, but it's also none of my business. Oh, my God. I feel for you so much. So much. So first thing, I think you handled it well as far as like just give her back her money. Like my overall, one of my overall personal policies that I try to maintain in life is don't engage with crazy. Like, I would rather cut the cord, give the money, have them go away. You can't always do that because when you're a leader of groups, things like this will happen. But then I'm always looking for like, because a lot of times I don't know this person B or what her psychology is, but a lot of times people like this feed off of the disruption or the aggression or whatever, the engagement. They get energy from it. You are being drained by it. So you got to cut that off as quickly as possible because there's no winning. There's no winning if what they enjoy is just the tussle, the drama. Okay. So good move, even if it's against your policy. I think I would add to that clause that you're going to add to your contract, your email address will not be shared. Outside contact is at the sole discretion of the participants. Visionary writing workshop bears no responsibility for what transpires between participants outside of the workshop space. If something does transpire outside of the workshop space and you feel you will need to leave the program, a no refund will be made. You are welcome to leave, but no refund will be made. You know, what we can't control is what people write about us and say about us. We are at the mercy of the fact that people can do it and they can do it anonymously. So I think keeping your money, and even if someone came to you, Karen, and was like, I'm going to write vicious things online about you if you don't give me my money. It's like, they're giving them, that's called extortion, and giving them money isn't necessarily going to prevent them from writing it. So it's like, well, I'll just keep my money and guess use it to protect myself in some other way. Anyway, but every single incident will have its own nuance, and you just have to go with what you think is right in the moment. But policies are nice. It just kind of sets everybody on alert. Okay. Let's take this question. Going forward, my workshops may be invitation only. And I'm assuming you're sort of leaning towards that because the question is, how do you keep the crazy out?
Well, like I noticed that it's, I just really need to know that people are intentional about working on their writing, using the workshop as a way to enhance their own writing and accomplish their project. And clearly this other person that came in had a different agenda. She was more... Okay.
When you say clearly she had a different agenda, was there other things she did that indicated to you she had a different agenda?
She was very disruptive in the group. She made it really hard. I was not sad to let her go. And that's one reason I was willing to make a transaction, because she was very needy of attention. So she was sucking energy by needing attention. Extra attention in the group, acting confused, saying, I don't know how this works. I know I'm not supposed to say this, but you know, just constantly undermining and taking focus away from the work.
And how did you handle that?
That was just kind of writing it in the moment and gauging in the moment. It would be more disruptive to say that, you know, to make such, you know, slap her back with a boundary, or to just, she slipped it in before I would have a chance to do anything. And I was just trying to get a sense of, is this her shtick? Is she going to just keep doing this no matter what? Or what can I even do to mitigate this? And so I was still assessing that along the way, and where I could, I curtailed it as best I could without having her take an affront from it mm-hmm. and get defensive and mm-hmm. make it an issue, because she was always perched, ready to make something.
Yeah. So she was
issue.
Nuts.
Yes. That's,
I use that
the short answer.
I use that term very loosely, and I don't mean it as a pejorative against mental health, because I know that we're not supposed to use that slang, but I'm just saying that she, you're right. Like, she definitely is someone who responds to group dynamics as a forum in which to just get what she wants stimulation wise out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sounds like you handled that well. As a facilitator, it does take a while to get a beat on how people are. And, you know, if they're just having a weird day or if this is a pattern, like it takes a while, it takes a couple sessions to sense a pattern. And she was only in there for 1 month until this mm-hmm. all kind of happened. So one thing you can do, if it feels good in the moment, is just be like, I'm going to put a pin in that for a minute. And I'd love it if you have the time to hang out for 5 more minutes after this call. And I'll address that with you after the call is over. And then try to avoid, I get it. I'll address that after with you. We're going to have a little private. And if they're like, I can't do it, then we'll find a time. We'll schedule before our next call. And just sort of see if you can then say to her, here's the thing. And this might be another clause you put, and we'll talk about vetting, but this might be something like in the vetting process. It's like, when you're entering a group, it's important that the dynamics of such small, intimate groups really function well. And it usually does so if everyone's being a professional and yielding the floor to the coach and to their fellow members. Sometimes people don't mesh with group dynamics, and I hold out the option to inform you, at least by the end of the first month, that I don't think you might not be a good fit for this group. And I'll refund your money. If that's my decision, I'll refund your money and we can part ways. I would say at any time before the end of the first month. So session number one, if you're like, I don't like you, then you can just refund the money and they're out. Because you're saying, I'm trying my best to curate a group. And what that text signals to the other people joining your group is like, oh, good, she's going to watch out for the nuts. She's going to, you know, nip it in the bud.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be one way to do that.
Okay.
And then, so when you say invitation only, you're sort of like, they have to fill out kind of like a questionnaire. So
yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe an application, maybe a short Zoom. I haven't been able to just, people keep their crazy in the pocket during the
initial. Oh, yes, they do. Yeah. You get better and better. Like if you have, here's the thing. I have, when people want to work with me that I don't know, there's like 3 questions, a little form, contact information, 3 questions. And it's what I'm really looking for when I read those is, first of all, some people don't answer the questions. They'll put like a sentence and I'm like, okay, something's going on here. You're just not sharing. Or there'll be things that are like, I hope this happens and this. And I'm like, well, that's fantasy thinking, or that's way out of the scope of what I can provide. And sometimes I read it and it just sounds fine. And that may or may not be fine later, but I don't see any red flags. If I do see a red flag or I'm not sure, then I schedule with them. Let's talk, jump on the phone for 20 minutes. And then I can get a little bit more the feel for them.
Mm-hmm. Can you share what your questions are on the form?
Oh, it's right on my website. So if you go to christineoller.com/coaching,
okay,
just scroll down, you'll see the little form.
Okay, great. Thank you.
They're not like super brilliant. It's just questions that I hope to elicit a little.
Yeah, I think that would be really helpful. Something like that.
I like doing a little tiny application form mm-hmm. because if there is a glaring red flag, you'll see it. And then if you instead of just like every person who applies, we have a Zoom call. It's like, no, some people you don't need that with.
Mm-hmm.
They're referred by somebody, like, you're just like, oh, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep the crazy out? You won't be able to every single time. The stuff we're talking about helps, but I don't want you to feel like, oh man, my wall, my fortress wasn't. No,
no, no, I know.
Because you, like you said, they keep it deep in the pocket. Yes, this drama is taking up a lot of your time. Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. These kind of things take up a lot of time that people don't appreciate. And by the way, this is another reason that when you're pricing your services, it is not about the hour or whatever you're spending with the client. It's about all of this bandwidth that it takes to lead a group or do one-on-ones or hold space for somebody for a year, whatever you're doing. It's part of the cost. Got to factor it in. When you say, let me ask you one question before we get to your last question. So I think you were absolutely right when you're like, no, we're not, you're not going to review this piece of writing inside the workshop because we're not going to get into that. Do you think, because you mentioned that Jay really felt like they wanted their side heard.
I'm surmising that from the fact that she wrote that piece. That, yeah. I don't know, having had any other information in regards to that.
When you read her piece, did you get more insight into what happened? Or
it's pretty darn weird. She only writes about the incident up until the point that she arrives at the house, and then the incident happens. Yeah, it's like, it was kind of like that Catskill joke, you know, the food is terrible in such small portions. It's like, well, the story is horrifying, but what's the rest of it? You know, it's right. Like, it was like, I didn't get to see the whole car wreck. And so that was immaterial to whether it would come in the workshop or not, but what it would do, it would trigger the drama. It would only be about the content, and everyone would be asking what happened. And then she would get the floor. She would have like showcase verbal, non-written time. If she didn't bother to put it on the page, she's not going to come and pitch it in the workshop. So, and have everyone, you know, have her one-sided interpretation is just 18 different ways of wrong.
Yeah.
So but here's the chasm, is that she did it not knowing it was even 0.5% way of wrong. You know, so how do I bridge this chasm with her successfully?
Right. Okay. First, I want to point out to everyone, you just heard you've heard Karen's expertise right there. And I just want to point this out because she's been leading workshops for a long time. And you can hear that she's like, oh, if we allow this piece of writing, which in and of itself, the words on the page, not inflammatory, like, okay, words on the page, but she hasn't told us the juicy part. And then that's what everyone will ask. And then she will have this forum. I mean, Karen is seeing it three steps ahead of, oh, I see where this person may be really trying to take this. And Karen also sees, I don't actually see that this person really understands the full spectrum of how wrong that kind of action is inside a group like this. So I just wanted to spotlight and applaud your coaching expertise.
Thank you.
There and group facilitators, like, oh, I can see where this is going. And by the way, guys, you only learn this stuff by doing it. So Karen has done it and done it and done it and done it. And this is just the most explosive thing, you know, and I had a very explosive thing happen in 2020, and I had something else happen. 2020 was my biggest by far, but boy, it was instructive. And I learned a lot from that. And then the other little things that have happened after that incident have been easier to deal with because of how hard that incident was for me to deal with. So it's all good. So there's two things. You are scheduled to talk to Jay on a private session. And you're like, one, this person doesn't even understand how kind of wrong her tactic is. And then also, you probably won't have space for her in the fall. Is that because you don't want her in the workshop?
I'm having, you know, she's trying to hoist the red flag. So yeah. I'm, and like, let it fly proudly. So I have to consider that.
Yeah. Yes. And there's a couple red flags here. Although we don't know what happened between B and J, something happened. So that's a little red flag about Jay, which is a small red flag, yet compounded, though, I want to come back in here and submit some writing that will set me up to deliver my POV on this whole thing. That's the big red flag. But added to that other red flag, now we have two red flags. So I think you're kind of right that it's a hard call because you've worked with her before and she's right and she's been okay before. So do you think that there's any way on this Zoom call, is there anything you could get from her that would make you feel comfortable continuing working with her? Or are you kind of ready to cut the tie?
Oh, I think I want to finish this season with her.
Of course.
A way I thought I could phrase the question is to her is what around this is still unresolved for her that could affect her participation in the group.
I think that's great. And I think I would preface that question with, and she already knows you're not going to accept this piece of writing to be.
Correct.
Okay. And what did she say when you said that to her?
Well, I emailed her and said, I don't feel comfortable sharing this with the group. And because it's about a former member by name. Mm-hmm. And could you please submit something else that you're working on? Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm sorry, I don't have anything else, but I'll make comments on everyone else's. Mm-hmm. And really the reason I'm questioning her space in the fall session is her level of dedication to her work. You know, she should have other pages to send me mm-hmm. that are from her book she's working on. You know, she shouldn't be coming up with this. So other people are working and doing okay. This.
And you suggested that you guys have the Zoom call.
No, this was as part of the workshop, everyone gets a 30-minute check-in where I spend 30 minutes with them and talk about their project and just, you know, give them, help them make a trajectory to get the most out of the workshop. Mm-hmm. And so she has just scheduled hers. It was already on the books before all this happened. And so that's a space that she and I have together where we're just one-on-one. And since she's, you know, the piece she submitted is almost like a cry for help. It's like, I want to just see what she's doing. And I want to approach it in a way that will work out the best. That's all.
Yeah. My suggestion, how does this sound? I actually think you should split. Think of this as two separate conversations. Tomorrow is just all about clearing the air, addressing whatever you feel you need to address with her, like where are your other things you're working on? Like what? Keep the conversation about, you know what? I don't think until after the workshop is done. Now, my guess is you're going to open enrollment for the next 3 months a little bit prior to the end. And if she, because maybe she won't want to continue. But if she does submit her application, or if she does raise her hand going, I'd like to continue, then I would email her and go, I'm just going to put a pin in your application. And we're going to talk about when we're at the end of this current session. And then at the end of the session, I think you're better positioned to deliver the news of, you know, the people going forward are exhibiting or at a different level. And I feel the strength of the group needs to be kept intact. And so I don't think it's the group for you. We can work one-on-one. There's other writing groups for you, but that will have more weight and not feel directly connected to this issue if you make that decision at the end of this 3-month thing.
Oh yeah. This is just me in my head saying, I don't know if I want her back.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm not going to tell her anything about that. Okay. That's not a conversation. Okay, I really want to, you know, figure this elephant out now, because she's still, you know, look what she's doing. She wants some attention paid to this. Mm-hmm. And I do not want it in the group. So I feel like I need to address it privately with her.
Yes. Perfect. Yeah.
And so, it does sound like you're saying, like, she may be thinking, oh, I've heard one side of the story, and she might want to correct that, but I haven't actually heard. I've just heard like dramatic aftermath and pain and suffering in mm-hmm. relation to the story, mm-hmm. but not, I have no idea. I mean, my mind's going everywhere, you know, as a fiction writer, of like what could have happened. And I'm
so. Yes or no? Do you want to hear her side of the story?
I want her to tell me whatever she needs to tell me so that it will not get in the way of her participation going forward.
Okay, then ask her that. But don't engage in a back and forth about it. Just you tell me whatever you, and then you go, okay. So, and then move it on to like, you know, that's very different than getting into a, like, don't ask her details. Like, so what do you mean she said that? So what was her tone? Like, just listen and then go, is there anything else you need to feel resolved around this?
Yes. And I think I might invite her to process it elsewhere, you know, find out if she has a therapist or.
Yeah. If she sounds like she needs to. Yeah. You go, this is not the forum for this. I'm not going to engage in this conversation. It happened outside of my purview. Yeah. That's your this is literally your personal life that you're bringing into this professional forum. I'm not the person to help you with that. Yeah. I think you've got this.
I'm really curious. Can you share anything about your 2020 explosive that would be instructional for us?
I don't necessarily think it will be instructional, except I had to make some really hard judgment calls. I've had a group in which some members had been in the group for 10 years. And something happened along racial lines, and I had to tell someone, and this was 4 months before I couldn't fucking believe it. It was 4 months before the actual entirety of the group was ending. So this, just, you know, not done this. We could have all just gone for 4 more months and then the whole thing would have ended. But I had to let her know that she could no longer be in the group, which she and I had a lot of private sessions together. She'd been in the group many years. This is not cutting her off from the relationship she had in the group, but cutting her off from something that had been in her life for a long time. I didn't not like her, but this is not okay. And the hardest part is she didn't understand why it wasn't okay. She just wouldn't let it sink in why it wasn't okay. Kind of astounding in 2020, considering all that was going on. But,
and if I can ask, was it a comment that happened in the group or an incident that happened in the group or outside the group?
It was something that happened on email outside of the, like, there was an exchange inside the group that then continued, that wasn't, I mean, it was unwise, but not calls for excommunication. But then what continued on email after that was.
And were you privy to all those emails? Are you able to see those, or is that?
Yeah, yeah.
So you could see that happening?
Yeah.
And that's how you could, did the person who felt affronted come to you and say, I don't like this? Or did you have to get rid of?
Brought to my attention, and I had to deal with it. Now, the sticky wicket, and the, what was so hard for me, is that about 2 years prior, the same person that I was asking to leave the group had brought something to my attention that happened with another member of the group. And in that situation, I was like, I didn't see that happen. It's very, he said, she said kind of thing. I've known both of you for quite a while. I haven't heard of a pattern. So I'm actually not going to do anything. Now, in light of what I had myself had learned throughout 2020 and unlearned throughout 2020, I think I would have gone back and handled that differently. So it burned her even more that I hadn't handled that in the same degree that I'm handling this. So it was so fraught and so complex and so hard for me, because I realized that that was her experience of this, and it was a legitimate experience of it. It's like, oh, so you're not going to, but you're going to hear. Like, so the hard part about being a leader is you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to hurt people's feelings, and you're going to have people who don't understand your point of view. And very often the people who aren't understanding your point of view haven't led groups themselves. So they're not in your shoes, and they're not understanding the rainbow of considerations you're considering, not just the isolated incident. It's like, how do I handle this? How does it affect the group? How does it affect my policy continuing forward? How do blah, blah, blah. Am I losing money off of this? And that, by the way, is a point, if you feel it's salient to bring up, I wouldn't just bring it up, but it might be, Jay has cost you money. That is a big deal for me. If someone does something, because I've removed somebody else from my group before, because I was like, oh, no, you just cost me money. And that's not how that we roll on this. You know, you can't disrupt my business with your shenanigans. Like, that's no. So I think that, you know, that is a salient point. If you feel you need to bring it up with Jay, of just like, look, I'm not going to talk about this. And you've cost me money in my business so far. And you don't have to explain why. You don't have to go and don't go into any details. People who want to just root around in the details are there for the stimulation. They're not there getting the big picture of it. It's a distraction tactic. So, yeah. So there's a little bit about it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really relate, but I can say it's tough and it's hard, and you're not going to do it perfectly right. And all you have to do is go, okay, well, that was sticky and I learned a few things.
Yeah, it's something incendiary happens between two people, and then that kind of blows up over here, and it blows a hole in the circle.
And your job is always, always, always to protect the people who are being the professionals protect your business, first of all, and then protect the people who are showing up and doing the yes. work. And just protecting them and protecting them and protecting them.
That's the main, that's because she seems to want to infiltrate the group with it, you know, bring this into the group, bring this into the group in this inappropriate yeah. way, especially in this kind of passive aggressive way. And I want to make that clear that that's, it's not going to be discussed in the group.
Got it.
And then she has this opportunity right now, tomorrow, to discuss it with me if she wants to.
Right. If that's how it. You'd like to use your 30-minute session with me, feel free. It's your time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because she should be dropping it and discussing with you something about her other work.
Well, it's too close on the heels of her submitting that those pages for her to drop it.
Oh, but you guys could have a conversation about so many other things about her writing or career or thoughts or what should she work on like, yeah. But if she wants to use these, and she doesn't get more than 30 minutes.
No.
Yeah. You've got this.
Okay.
It just feels, it feels the way it feels because that's how it feels.
It's really slimy. Yeah. It's
yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Christine.
You're so welcome. Let me know how it goes. I'm interested always. All right, Regina. Regina Hi, you had a wonderful victory. You did it. This is what Regina wrote. Regina is a cash flow cat. Her side biz is peaceful pets and intuitive pet sitting. She does Reiki on pets. I told my client that I'm not going to be able to include the post-session breakdown PDF that took you like 45 minutes to write, not going to be able to include that anymore. And she was understanding and asked if that meant I was getting more Reiki crystal clients, to which I affirmed what hasn't happened yet, but that I know what will. And you said, yeah, yes, that. And you said you love that and you don't have to do that aspect anymore. Regina, you are so brave. So brave. You're always willing to do the hard thing and the brave move. And you have released yourself from the bonds of those PDFs. Yes. And she was like, okay. And then I am also so proud of you. And this is the biggest victory of that is... because you're very different than you were even just several months ago. Does this mean you are getting a lot more clients? Yes. And you're just like, I'm answering that to affirm what is happening. What is happening? Instead of being like, oh, well, you know, nope, you chose the moment to answer with the most positive energy and with an answer that also serves your business. Yeah, because that is the whole point. You're getting more work as an actor. You're getting more clients. So it's like, yeah, I don't have time for this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that you had the reflex to say yes in the moment is the biggest victory.
I mean, I paused, you know.
But you paused because you held yourself back from any other answer than yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Before it comes naturally, trippingly off our tongue, there is a pause. So our brain can be like, don't say that other thing you're used to saying.
Yeah. And I think too, the because this definitely was like an act of... protect, I don't know if protect is the right word, but protecting my energy. So I'm not doing spending 45 minutes on those reports anymore. And I felt that it was more recognizable then in that moment, in that pause of, do I say what would be reality to our society right now? Or what is reality in what the universe is doing for me or whatever? And do I want to spend the energy like explaining those details of like, well, it's not good to lie. Don't lie. But I was like, but this isn't lying. And so anyways, it was just a very interesting to just see that, how quickly that was like almost as fast as my old instinct, right? Like, oh, well, but if you say all the stuff that's like what we normally say and what's happening in reality, that's going to take more time and I'm going to use more language and I'm going to have to think more because I like to say things more professionally with my clients. So there's, yeah, no, I'm just going to say yes. So yeah, I just wanted to say that part too. Yeah.
So,
it begets itself, right?
You got it.
Mm-hmm.
You got it. You taking the action of stopping those PDFs and letting your client know is signaling to the universe, look, I'm serious about this. I'm doing the first step. I'm clearing some space for the more acting or more client, whatever you want to give me, the more I'm doing it. And then when she's like, is this because you're getting more clients? You're speaking to the universe and going, yes, 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 yes. We are on board with the yes. So you're not giving mixed signals. You're like, look, I'm doing everything that supports where I want us to go. And the universe is like, we get it. We see you. Okay. Very clear intention. Excellent. And your words and actions are aligning with what you want. So good. So then you had this question. Communication. Can we raise any part of our rates once we're on a job or once we're in the middle of a job, but before we create the invoice? Or do we have to grin and bear it with this one and then just up our rates for the next time? And what you explained is on a recent pet sitting job for my longest standing clients, and they are the ones who referred you to a lot of your other clients, so they're good clients, I realized that the amount I had raised my rates to didn't feel like it matched up very well to the workload. This particular time, there were more pets and more rotations. And I felt this so strongly that I've been trying to figure out if there's a way to charge more for something, anything. I just finished the job last night and I've yet to create the invoice. So why were there more pets and more rotations? Like,
so they run a rescue.
Okay.
And, when I raised my rates for that, when I started out, this is where I kind of set my rates a little low. And, I also feel like part of my work with them is sort of like, I don't charge them quite as much because I've decided that part of my working and helping with them is donating a bit or helping the charity too. So it changed. So they have their family pack, their own dogs, and there's four of them right now. Okay. And then they usually have a couple of rescues. I think the most I've done is 10 their place. And in the past, I don't know, I didn't always feel it as much. That could be because of where I was self-esteem wise. That could be because it was actually easier where like I could take all three or all both two rescues out at the same time together. And then I could take their pack out together. Mm-hmm. So that's only two rotations. So their new family pack. Now there's a dog that doesn't get along with another dog. So I have to do two separate rotations within their family pack. And then the other two rescues that were there this time, I guess one isn't friendly yet. or it's never going to be. So he's a dog aggressive. So I had to do those guys on separate rotations. So that's four rotations.
And by a rotation, you mean a walk?
It's a backyard. So again, I know, like, even Zach, my fiance, was like, but you're not walking them. And I'm like, I know, I'm just letting them out in the backyard, but I have to stay out there with them. Sometimes I have to monitor them, make sure some of them don't eat things that they're not supposed to eat, because some of them will do that. And then it's like more of a problem. I have to make sure they don't go in certain parts of the yard. Like it don't bark too much. It's not, I can't like go on autopilot. Like, yeah, I have a lot of other, almost all my other clients are much easier. I have 2 to 3 dogs that, yeah, it's mostly 2 dogs. I can either walk together or I do 2 walks a day separately, and it's like a 15-minute walk each.
So, but if you're doing 2 rotations with each, like splitting up the house animals and splitting up the foster animals, that's twice as long.
Yes. It takes me an hour to do a complete household rotation of letting them out in the backyard to relieve themselves and play. Mm-hmm. And yes, so it this time it was, and then there's 2 cats I have to feed that live outside as well. So the morning and the dinner rotation, it's 8 animals I'm dealing with. And my rate, and I counted it in my head, it's only going to be $155 a day, which just every day I was just so burnt out.
Right. And are you staying at their house as well?
Yes, I stay there. And they're close to where I live.
That's nice. That's called a bonus. That has nothing to do with your rates. That's just a bonus.
I know.
You don't have to drive far.
Yeah.
But $155 a day to stay in someone's house, you're protecting their property. Mm-hmm. And you're corralling 8 animals. I mean, that's a steal, man.
I don't even charge for the cats, because I don't even count. They're outdoor cats. I don't have to do anything. I just plop some food out of a can. So, but now I'm like, no, I felt that this time.
Uh-huh. So what would your thing be for them in the future? It's $155 a day if I'm only dealing with your personal pets.
Yeah.
Any additional, it has to be this much additional per day per rescue animal that I'm now dealing with, or per addition to your household animal from here on out. I think that's kind of how it has to be.
Okay.
So yeah. How much would you charge per additional animal?
You're probably going to wince at this. I mean, I'm wincing inside. 20.
Why? Well, what would make you not wince?
I was like, you know, I really shouldn't be doing this workload for less than 200 a day. Like,
yeah,
this should be like 225. And that's still being relatively charitable. And they don't have anyone else. I mean, they have volunteers for the rescue who would help out in a jam, but
yeah.
So I tried to quit them actually before the pandemic.
Oh,
I actually did quit them. I was like, I'm really sorry, you guys, it is just too much. Uh-huh. With the restaurant job I was working at the time and acting
What did they say?
How did
you not then quit?
Well, then the pandemic hit and everything came to a halt. Mm. And once it became a little safer to travel. I started picking up pet sitting again. Okay. And she asked, and I was like, okay, but this, okay. But these are my higher rates, you guys.
Right. Okay. And when did you give them the higher rates? What date? 2021.
Yeah. Yes. It was, I think it might've been 2020, end of 2020.
Oh, okay. So you've been doing these rates for quite some time.
Yeah. And it's a very nice.
2022. The world has now changed again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And your business is changing and you're doing more acting. And
yeah.
How many other pet sitting clients do you have right now? Regular, like these people?
Like three or four, yeah. So mm-hmm. I've got like four or five really rock solids.
Mm-hmm. And are you billing them at 150? Like, what are you billing them?
They are, I have one that I charge $125 for three dogs, but they're easy. So I feel more comfortable with that. And I also, when I raised the rates on everyone, I was raising from like $85. Yeah.
Everybody has been, this is something you have to factor in and acknowledge for yourself. Everyone who has employed you as a pet sitter has been saving gobs of money on pet sitting. You have allowed them to save a lot of money off this service for years.
Yeah.
Because your rates were so low.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. That's totally fine. But let's acknowledge it. They've been able to save a lot of money.
Okay.
Okay. So I think it's pretty fair for you to go. You have to invoice them the amount they expected to be charged.
Yeah.
For this. That's lesson learned.
Grin and bear it.
Grin and bear it. It's one of those things. I've done it so many times. So, but I would include with the invoice a letter saying, you know, the complexity of your situation, the amount of animals, and the energy that it takes to give it my best, you know, and really, really, you know, and the other side of my business also ramping up means I have to make an adjustment to my rates with you.
Mm.
I would love to continue with you, but I totally understand if you need to find somebody else. But if you would like to continue with me, it will be $200 for your family pets as they stand now, four dogs, two cats, $200 a day. And then if you add any more animals to your household pets, or if you'd like me to care for any of the rescue, it's $25 per animal per day.
Okay. I do have one caveat is that I was hoping, well, I had talked with her who runs the rescue about volunteering maybe once or twice a month to go and do Reiki stuff at their shelter because they have like a shelter now. Which I'm hoping would lead to funneling. And it's like a 4-minute bike ride from where I live. So it's very like kismet. Wow, this seems like this would work out. So I think that amount might interrupt the pet sitting.
Okay, what amount wouldn't? I totally understand your reasoning. Yeah, it's like, this could be a good funnel. She's already sent me other clients. I just don't want to feel like I'm not getting anything for this work.
Yeah.
Okay, so what would be just the overall flat rate per day that would make you feel good? that you think wouldn't scare her?
I think like where what I think like 225 for the all of them, which I can subtract and figure out what the base rate would be for their family dogs.
Okay.
But their family dogs would be no less than like maybe 160 now or something like that.
So you're going to break it down of like, here's the cost for your family animals, and then here's the rate for each additional rescue animal.
No, the way I do it now is kind of how we have other stuff set, which is like 105 base rate for one family dog, and then being too charitable, $10 for each additional dog.
Oh, I see. Got it.
Yeah. So I would just up the base rate and then up the additional.
Okay. You can just up the base rate. You can still charge $10 because that in her mind might be like, well, I'm still charging just $10 per extra animal.
Yeah.
Why don't you do it like that?
Okay.
Just up the base rate. Okay. So in your letter, you'd say, okay, but because, you know, things are shifting in my world and I'm going to need to make this adjustment to the base rate. So I'm just going to raise the base rate to this, but it's still for you only $10 more per animal as we've been doing it. So you're sort of like, but not much is changing. Don't worry. It's still just $10 per animal, but I'm upping the base rate.
Okay.
See how you're framing that? To be
yes, and she has already tried to book me for April next year. I'm like, I'll pencil it in. I don't know what my life is gonna look like then,
right?
And I'll have to give you the
you can also say, I cannot book a year ahead at these rates. I can maybe book my time a year ahead, but
right,
I can't just promise.
Yeah.
And maybe at this point you can't promise pet sitting because maybe you won't have to be doing it in a year.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. But here's what I love. I love that you heard your soul, your intuition going, I think we need more for this. And you're listening to it and you're responding. Of like, yeah, I've got to raise this.
Yeah.
And you do it when you send the invoice. You just here's the new information going forward. And then it's her choice.
Yeah.
And she's not going to hate you. She'd be an idiot not to realize like, oh, I can't believe Regina's raising her rates. Like, I think the framing is, I can't believe I got such a good deal for so long with this beautiful woman who loves and cares for my pets and have kept them safe.
Yeah.
And I would refer her to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the relationship you have.
It is.
You guys are just discussing economics and prices for everything are going up. Life is becoming more expensive. And it's something we all have to kind of, you know, make adjustments for. Yeah.
And I mean, she does use the foundation to pay me the portion, like she splits it up to cover the rescues anyway. So
yeah.
It's not.
Well, that's her business. How she pays you is her business.
Right. Well, that's right.
Yep. So that doesn't factor into what you need to be able to provide this service and feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good job, brave person.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Liz, I just want to let everyone else on the call know that if you also have a question, I watch the time and I divvy up the time based on, you know, the questions that are submitted to me beforehand. But if you join the call and you're like, oh, I also have a question, raise your hand so I can try to fit it all in. Otherwise, I just kind of divvy up the time according to what's submitted. Liz. First okay. of all, your victory. So Elizabeth has a side job, but she is also an amazing cash flow tiger dialect coach. To prove that, I shall read her victory. A good friend asked me for audition help with a difficult accent. It was for a highly anticipated new series. The character is recurring. They contacted her the day after she submitted her audition, and she's been put on a veil. A win for her and for you. 1,000,000%. She would not be on a veil if her accent was not great. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm excited. I feel like I'm starting to see higher caliber projects.
Right. right. And something you can put on your website is clients have appeared with accents on all of these shows. And I would put the logos for the shows and the logos for the networks.
Okay.
FX, ABC, Bapadoo, and also logos for the individual shows. This show, okay. this theater, this play.
I had that listed in a resume, and I should do that. My question too is, she's been put on a veil for episode 100 and something where they're not even filming yet. So this will be a while away. It won't mm-hmm. be on her IMDb for a while. Mm-hmm. Do I still claim that now and say I coached on this project, or do I need to wait for that to be?
If and she
the same thing happened with another guy that I worked with, he's booked an animated series. It's not out yet. Do I not?
Oh no, you use that? It right away as long as they've booked it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. If they've booked the upcoming Fox series, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not within your control or your client's control whether or not projects go the distance or they get cut out or their scene gets cut out. Like you get to claim it the minute they cross the booking line.
Okay. That's what I was wondering, because like I have a friend that did a show. He was in Better Call Saul and it didn't air till a couple weeks ago. So that wasn't on his IMDb. He wasn't claiming it till it came out because of VAs. And so I just wondered if I can claim that now.
Oh yeah. Just help my client book Better Call Saul with a Northeastern Texas accent. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I would, you know, every quarter or twice a year, send out a little client spotlight, just cheers and congratulations to my lovely clients who have in the last, you know, 6 months booked on this, booked on that, booked on this.
Okay.
You can say their names if you want to, you know, you're just like shouting it out. It's like, dang.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay. Okay. So this question that you have, you wrote, I'm still struggling with how to structure and propose an online workshop series, mainly because online instruction has exhausted me when I've been doing it one-on-one. But I have two professional acting studios looking for me to teach a series of online masterclasses and workshops for their students. I'm also feeling a bit overwhelmed and unprepared regarding to how to communicate my credentials to them. It's like my brain knows what I want the outcome to be, but I can't untangle what to do first, second, third, fourth. And my struggles with ADHD and anxiety don't help. So please advise. Totally get it. Totally understand.
I talked with you a little bit about this during the last mindset. And then you told me to come to cash flow. And
yes. So the kind of structure. First of all, congratulations for having two studios being like, can you please teach? What happened with Australia? Is that
that's one of them? Yeah, I'm still
okay. Not there. Okay.
So one thing that I will say is, I had an aha moment at a family reunion, which of all places was interesting because I was on the Australia website and they said, most of our classes don't go longer than 4 or 5 hours. And I just am like, 4 or 5 hours stuck to the stupid screen on Zoom? What are you talking about?
Right.
But I told my cousin about this at a family reunion, and she's a therapist for kids. And she's like, oh yeah, I'm on these calls for a long time with this group therapy stuff. And it's like, we break into breakout groups. I tell the kids to go do something for an hour and then come back with their thing. And I just hadn't thought of structuring a class that way. I usually do my lecture and then assign them to go away and come back the next week with prepared for the next class. So I've thought of doing that. I've also thought of doing like some pre-recorded material and then they respond to it during the class. So I'm toying with this. I feel like I'm sort of not knowing what I'm doing. So right. That's where I'm at.
Okay. So you have one in Australia and one in Los Angeles where the studios are based. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about each of them separately because they may not. Are you going to teach the exact same thing for both, do you think, or are they each individual?
No, the Australia one seems to want me to do several different accents over a few weeks. And I feel like that is not how I've structured it in the past in Los Angeles. I could. So they might be open to however I want to structure it.
But before
it was just more specifically, let's work on this one or two for these weeks. So
right. And so
Australia specifically wants a 6-week thing.
6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of like, were they sort of like 6 weeks, 6 accents? Were they like that?
Kind of. And I don't feel like that really works as well. So they want specifically UK accents that are in demand for projects right now. But also they said also some European. And I'm like, do you not want any American accents? And also, I'm not sure if they understand how all this works. I feel like more and more people are being hired for their own native accent. So you need to be pretty good if you're going to be up against a native speaker of an accent.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's that. And I also feel like for the most part, my approach has been teaching Americans how to speak other accents. And I did have an Australian attend one of my workshops, a 1-day thing, who said, I really knew half of this already because Australian has some similarities to the British stuff. So I'm feeling like I have to tweak some of my stuff. So it's just all kind of like, what do I do with this?
So the first thing you need with Australia is to get clear on what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you want American? And they can't just tell you, oh, maybe some European. What do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And they might
want me to tell them what's in demand, but it really depends on
right
the actor's type and a million other things.
Okay. I think that's the correct answer, by the way. And I was also assuming that they were going to flip it back to you and go, well, just what are you working with your clients on? Mm-hmm. Like, what would be most valuable to our students and attractive to the students. So my question to you is, what do you think? You're the expert. What do you think would be most valuable for the Australian students to learn?
I think a standard upper class British. I feel like that's where I usually start with people because then you can really break off other accents from there. It becomes easier to learn the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's been my approach. So to and spend then, a couple of weeks on that and then maybe branch out to other things.
And what about American?
And American too, for them. I think that would be huge.
Yeah.
If their actors are wanting to be in any kind of American movies.
And yeah. I'm assuming they do.
I'm assuming they do too.
So all their stars have banging American accents. Okay. So I think it feels to me by what you've said that they kind of do want you to lead them.
Yeah.
When you feel a client wants to lead them, this goes for everybody. Take the reins and go, okay, well, here's what I think would be most valuable to your students. And this is the structure I think will allow them to absorb it the best. Meaning, this is the structure that will allow me to teach it the best. You know what I'm
saying? Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. So it sounds like within the 6 weeks, you would spend a real chunk of time on the standard UK accent. And then maybe one session on like, well, let's break out from that accent. Now, here's what you can do now that you've got that.
Mm-hmm.
Similar, a chunk of time on the standard American. And then, and here's how you deviate and play mm-hmm. around with that for all the different flavors we have.
Yeah, because I feel like those two would be more like, you can do a New York or a Southern American better if you understand how the standard American works. And you can
100%. It's like, let me teach you how to bake a cookie or bake a cake. And from then we're going to take these techniques and apply them to different recipes. Like mm-hmm. you know, that's how everything is taught. Subtraction and addition first, and then we'll do everything else. Yeah, makes perfect sense. And here's what I also like is that you're really teaching them diving a little bit deep on these two base things that they'll walk away doing better. But then you're also showing them, oh, and here's UK has all of this flavor and America has all of this flavor. And ladies and gentlemen, if you would like any of those specific flavors, you can hire me to do this one-on-one. Like, so you're really showcasing your ability.
Mm.
Oh, she doesn't just know those two, she knows all.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. And as a student, I think that would be, as an Australian, I think that would be an amazing 6 week experience because it's 100% true. The majority of stuff that's filmed, you know, for an English speaking actor to do is British and American stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's how you position it. These are your two biggest markets. If you're going to leave Australia, they're probably either going to go to London or New York or California.
Yeah.
So I am going to help you get where you want to go. Oh my God. Yes. Okay. Woo. Like that's text for how you're describing this class.
And it's fun to learn French or German or something like that, but it's just not as applicable as often. Right.
And you say that there's two things, this is just me in my mind, there's two things about learning an accent. One is first you have to understand the mechanics of learning any accent. Like let's just take standard British or whatever. Once I've gone through a process of, oh, this is how I learn an accent, then there's the second part of learning the specific accent you want. Mm-hmm. And you say that to them too. We're going to learn, I'm going to teach you how to learn an accent. And then you're better prepared if you get a role that calls for a French accent. You'll be able to learn that accent faster because you know how to learn an accent.
Yeah.
So you set it up like that. So you're not depriving them of like, oh, but I wanted to learn German. It's like, yeah. In a private session, you're going to be so much quicker in learning how to do mm-hmm. that. And that's what you're teaching them with this one day where you break out the UK accents and break mm-hmm. out the, it's like, oh, right. It translates so much easier now that we've learned how to learn the base.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then you just break up the 6 weeks. And it kind of sounds like 2 weeks on the standard UK, then a workshop breaking out the various accents, and 2 weeks on US standard, and then the final workshop on breaking out. That's how it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
If they want a 6 week structure.
And if they wanted me to do part two later, where I go into other things, and then that's sure. the more advanced class.
Absolutely. Now, how long, if that's our 6 week structure, how long I just lost something. How long would each session be per week?
And that's where I'm like, oh, I don't. Because when I taught the Leslie Kahn workshop, it was 3 hours a week, but we weren't tethered to a screen. And so I was thinking maybe I could do a pre-recorded thing where I'm discussing the concepts for a bit, and then we meet for the class for a shorter amount of time.
Yes. How much? 90 minutes? Are you thinking like for the class itself?
Yeah, maybe the class is 90 minutes or 2 hours and the lecture is like 45 minutes, an hour, something like that.
100%. I am so behind this. And here, this is the way I love to teach. The lecture can be watched on video.
Mm-hmm.
And then the class time is about let's work. This isn't something you learn intellectually. This is only something you learn by applying the intellectual concepts physically. So you're going to get pre-recorded instruction that you need to listen to before you come to class. And then we're going to work on the physical mechanics. So we have lots of time for you to get hands-on coaching and instruction. I think that is a far better use. And the other benefit is now you have all of this pre-recorded material. Now you can just be like, you never have to teach it again. And that's my point. I'm like, I don't like teaching. I like coaching. I don't like being asked to do workshops. I'll do them, but they're not my favorite because it's teaching. I'd rather pre-record something and teach it. That's how I did when I last taught something. I'm like, here's the two videos of all the information. Our six sessions are only coaching on that information. Mm. So much better.
Yeah.
So I would totally, totally, totally do that. And then try, instead of delivering, here's the 45-minute instructional video for class one, break it down. There are five. It's so much better to deliver five shorter videos.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Module one, there's the module that you're going to get for session one has five short videos. Watch them in order, practice, take notes, gather your questions, and bring those to our live session.
Okay.
Yep. I think that's great.
I have one other idea that my friend keeps pushing me to try, and that is an accent gym. Where people can pay a fee. And then every week I'm like, here's the copy. I know they've done something similar at Killian's workshop for commercial. But I would want it to be for people that have already worked with me on a particular accent. They're not coming in with completely new needs. Anyway, it's just something I thought about doing, but I think
it's
I want to
figure idea.
This out and first.
Yes, it's a great idea. In that once you have a clientele who's work, you need to have enough people who are into accents. Mm-hmm. Conceptually it's an interesting idea, but I think people are going to hire you when they have auditions that need a specific accent and they're not so much interested in jimming around with their accent. They'd rather take a class, you know,
and then come back when they need. Yeah.
And another selling point of this Australian class is you can have access to these videos.
Mm-hmm.
Have them, you know, the portal will always be open for you. So you're going to be able to revisit this stuff, the information.
Okay.
That's a huge like benefit. So now Liz, when you price this, you need to take into consideration that you're doing the time live with them. And you're preparing all the video material and they get the video material for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever handouts and stuff.
I had not figured that out. So I went through what I did with Leslie Kahn and I looked at the inflation calculator, which I think is good. You put in what you charged in such and such year, and then it shows you what you should be charging now for the same thing. And so I figured something out for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm like, maybe that's different than that. And so I was like, but that was live. Should that be more than an online class?
No. I don't
understand. This is keeping the material forever. And so,
oh my God, yeah. It doesn't matter. They're getting the same material live than they are online. I don't understand why people think online is cheaper. For me, it takes much more energy to do something online than in person, except for the commute.
Yeah.
So much easier in person. It's not more, less valuable online. It's the same teaching. So please, I don't want to hear it. Don't offend my ears. So what have you been thinking? Like, has Australia, are they going to set the price for this?
They said, what is your rate? And we would charge a 10% fee on top of that for our cut, which I feel like is super low on their end. They're doing all the registration. They're doing all the finding people. So that's great for me.
Okay. So they're basically going to cut you a check, no matter how many students are in the class. Yeah. Or are they going, as long as we get this many students?
They asked me how many students I would want per class, and they want a class for teenagers and one for adults.
Jeez. So, okay, great.
Yeah.
So how many students did you say per class?
I have not told them that yet, but I'm thinking when I do a live class, I can do 8 to 12, and I'm just trying to figure out what I want to do online.
Do you feel you couldn't do 12?
Well, I've just been trying to figure out time-wise, because I want people to have an opportunity to be doing a monologue or a scene every week so that they feel like they're participating and not just observing every week. So that's, there were 10 in my class that I taught in person, and that seemed pretty perfect at the time.
Okay. So 10.
I don't know, but if I'm doing.
Yeah. So what we're talking about is, what is the number that you're charging the Australia studio for this? And then they can add their 10% and divide it by the students and do whatever they want. But this is like, I need to get this much to deliver this material. What's that number?
The number is, what did I figure? I had it written down. Now I got to figure it out again. Times. It's about 18 hours of instruction. I was thinking, and maybe I shouldn't be looking at hours wise, but according to that inflation calculator, it was like 20 per student per hour of that 18. So that would be $60 per week per student. So that's $360 per student for the class. I don't know. Maybe that's not.
Your concern is not how much each student is being charged.
Yes. Okay. That's where I started with the calculation, but I need to be.
Yeah. But I'm just saying to you, let's look at, I want you to think of it from just, I'm an expert. I'm going to do all of this work and deliver it. How much would I like to get paid?
And that's where I feel like my mindset just goes, whoop, just kind of.
I see your hand, June, by the way, don't worry. So what would make you feel happy? Be like, oh, this is really exciting.
Maybe 4,000 for all of it. Is that bad? I don't know.
It's not bad. There's nothing bad.
I feel like I'm just, I have absolutely no idea.
Right.
And
right.
I, I've so, wasted time lately just looking online going, maybe this is too much brain work. I'll just go find a little job that pays me $20 an hour.
I know. Yeah. I know. So I think now for everyone listening, I'm not expecting her to set a price where it's going to cover all the time that she's going to put in creating these videos. That's an asset that will be amortized every time she teaches the class. She gets to use this material for the future. And I expect her to do this exact workshop many more times and charge the same for it, even though all the pre-material is now finished. So setting that workload kind of aside, 6 weeks, they're going to have at least, you know, 8 to 12, maybe 10 students there. So $5,000 sounds nice. But because if someone's going to do fast math and your client is not the students, your client is the studio. The math is between you and the studio. Students are not your individual clients. You're not putting on this workshop. The studio is putting on the workshop. So you just have to find the price conversation between you and the studio. And for the studio to do super fast math on a 6 week course and you say 5,000, they're like, well, that's less than 1,000 a week. It's not 6,000 because that would be 1,000. Like, I'm talking the fast math that we kind of do in our heads. So that sounds reasonable. When you say 5,000, if they do that quick math, well, let's listen. But yeah, that sounds doable. They're not like offended by it. So what you could do, if you do 5,000, it has to be the price you're sticking to. 5,000. That's how much I require to do this work. And then they take it or leave it. Or you can do 5,600. And then when they're like, oh gosh, I don't know, it's a lot, that wasn't in our budget, you can go, well, okay, I can go as low as 5,000. So you can build in a negotiable discount that would make them feel like 5,000 was better, or you can just lead with 5,000 and it's not up for negotiation.
Okay.
But Liz, you cannot say 5,000 and then negotiate lower than that. You either pre-plan a buffer for a discount, or you offer them the flat rate.
When I worked with Leslie Kahn in 2020, I asked for a rate and they were like, they were like, that's way too high. And so I ended up going lower, and yeah, I'm just looking at, this is 6 weeks. So that was a 3 week class. It would have, my share would have been about 3,200, I guess, for that. So then this is, if I'd done a 6 week class, it would have been that. I don't know. I'm just looking at this going, are these people going to take it? But I guess that I just need to throw
I don't know. Australia hasn't told you anything.
No.
They haven't offered you amount of money. They haven't told you what the going rate for this stuff is. They've basically said, what would you do for us and how much would it cost?
Yeah.
So,
and it would be USD would be different than Australian dollars.
Right.
Convert that too. So,
The thing is though, you have to charge enough so you're getting money.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're getting paid. Now, if they come back and go, that is too much, then you can go, well, we could just do the 3 weeks of the UK or the American.
Okay. I see. Yeah.
Less like, But for the students, if 10 people come to class, they're going to be charged probably a little under $600, which is $100 a week to learn from a master thing. And they get the information forever. And then they learn this new tool and they go book a fucking job that will pay for this workshop. Like, how are we doing the math? And part of your job is to be able to get them to see this in, from your perspective. It's like, well, I understand that you don't want to charge them this, but let's look at the math from what their the investment in their career is. And can we describe this class and how it's going to help them as a real, you know, wonderful opportunity? Because they may have weird money issues too. Everybody has weird money issues, but you need to be able to sell it to them.
Yeah.
You can, they're like, oh, that's a lot of money. Well, the way I look at it, the way I'm going to do it is they're going to get this video stuff that they'll have for the rest of their life. They're going to have the base knowledge of exactly what they need to then to branch off into any accent they would need to have. They're learning from an expert teacher who teaches people that book recurring roles on national shows. Like, this is what they're getting. So if you feel that that's not something that they value and appreciate, I'm sure there's other voice coaches.
Yeah.
It's like you got to take a stand, not just for your price, but for what those students are getting when they work with you. And your job is to get bigger muscles around saying that out loud or communicating it on paper. And you can do it.
I can do it. Yes, I can.
You can do it. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to listen to this recording as we walked through the steps for the Australia, and I want you to just walk through it for LeslieCon.
Okay.
And if you know that they have like a budgetary, because sometimes it's like people are only going to pay this, then it's about, well, then this is what I'm going to deliver. You can't make it the fancy thing that you know they need. It's like, well, okay, then I'll deliver this.
Yeah. Okay.
If the budgetary constraints, then we'll just do this little thing.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. This
but I even helpful. Like it when you're doing, if you do like even a 1 day workshop of like, here's the videos to watch before. So we can just hit the ground running, get the most out of our time together.
Okay.
You are up leveling.
Yes, I am.
For all of that work, 5,000 is base. It's base.
Yeah.
Base. Cool. June, did you have a little question we could like zoom in on?
Hi.
Hi.
I don't really have a little question, so it's okay if there's not.
Okay.
But I'll just share with you guys a couple wins that I have. Like, I'm sorry. Been like so MIA, life has been so crazy, but good things are happening. And a movie that I did like 4 years ago just got sold and is gonna have a theatrical release in the fall.
Fantastic. Then,
I know. And then a movie I just wrapped on just like, and that movie had a deadline article last week, and then a movie I just wrapped on just had a deadline article like 20 minutes ago. Be like letting people know that it's being like shopped around, and it's crazy. My little face is like right on the headline. I was like, oh my god. So it's really exciting, and I've definitely been grateful that like acting has been going really quite well, and I have made some money from it too. But I'm also like, I feel that anxiety kind of coming in of like, okay, I have money saved up now, like I am okay. But I'm also like, but the cash flow part, I'm like, when is the next, I don't know, like there's no guarantee. And so I'm kind of like, okay, I need to like remember that I am responsible for creating the cash flow with something else. And that's the thing that I'm struggling with a little bit, because before I was kind of doing that breathwork stuff, which I believe strongly in, but I also I don't feel actually comfortable leading people in that right now, because of where I'm at. Such a tumultuous, like a lot of exciting things going on, but also like I recently broke up with my boyfriend and had to move out of my apartment. So I'm currently like on the road, just like going from house to house. And so I'm like a little bit in an unstable, I mean, I feel fine. Like I feel stable, but like, I don't have the, like, I don't feel like I'm in a place right now to really be holding tremendously important space for other people to be going through. Yep.
Totally think that is a very mature observation to be like, probably not the best space to work with clients in, which is protective of your clients.
Yeah, exactly. And, but then I'm like, okay, well, so then what can I do? Cause like, I do need to like be bringing some money in. So I kind of feel like I'm back to the drawing board a little bit of cash flow kittening. Mm-hmm. And, so yeah, so that's kind of my goal, I guess, for this next couple of days is to really kind of brainstorm. So maybe just any advice on like where to start with that.
Yeah. Okay. So you want read the first part, the concept chapters in creating cash flow, because it really is about like, what do I already do like for people? What do people think I'm really good at? Like, what am I really good at? Like, what have people asked me for in the past? Like what, if you can, and it could also be, so there's lots of lists. You're going to be making lists upon lists. What are my skills? What are my strengths? Those are two different things. Sometimes there's overlap. You don't have to get too precious, but skills are like, I can type, and strengths are like, I'm really organized, or I'm really detail oriented, like skills and strengths. And I would also ask other people, because sometimes it's like, you can make a list of what you're not good at, but it's harder to make a list of what like you're good at for some people. So you can ask a couple friends, can you just like jot down skills and strengths? Like, what am I really good at, in an email, and send it to me over the next 24 hours? Things you're interested in, things you're like, ooh, I just love doing this. And don't judge it. Oh, my list of skills and strengths is so small. Oh, no one's going to pay me for any of these interests. Don't judge it. Bring that data back here, because it gives us the ability to connect some things in ways that you may not just apparently see. Because that's what happened with Regina. She's like, I'm really into crystals and Reiki, and I have this pet sitting business that I don't really like pet sitting, but I love me the animals. And we kind of connected inside a cash flow session. And it wasn't just me. It was like, there were input from other people. And especially as we started to get close to an idea, people were like, I'd pay for that. Like, yes, that, where she's doing Reiki on animals to calm, who've been through a transition or who've lost a companion animal, like to bring their energy back to baseline. So make those lists.
Yeah. Okay.
Make those lists. So come back here, so we can start looking at them and asking you questions and digging around like what might be, because what you're looking for is something that has low overhead. You don't have to go take a big class or, you know, something that you're like, I don't mind doing that. You know, it shouldn't take a great deal of your energy. Right. And something that you're pretty good at. You don't have to be fantastic at it. You don't have to have years of experience doing it. Just like, oh, I like it and I'm pretty good at it. Maybe you've done it before for somebody, but let's start piecing together. So read the concept section, make some lists, because there'll be prompts for other lists for you to make there, and then bring that back.
Okay.
And we'll find you something to charge you money, charge money for.
Okay. Amazing.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And congratulations on the acting. And for you, I would also want to be looking for what is something you can make cash at whenever you want to, between the jobs while you're on set. Like, who knows? But we just want this to be something that fits into your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because I want you to feel absolutely unimpeded and not worried about acting jobs. It's like, oh, I don't care. I'll fly here. I'll go there. I like anything. I'm open. Yeah. I don't have to worry about this other little thing over here that I have to take care of. No, that side biz should serve you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I also think I'm going to be moving around at least till the end of the year for jobs and for like, just because I'd love to not pay rent. Like for a million reasons, I just have a feeling like I'm not going to be home until the new year probably. Yeah. So I'm like, I need to definitely find something that would be something I can do like on the road and flexible. Yep. So
okay. Mobile, remote, virtual, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So bring that back. And whenever you're able to attend a session next, just remind me that you can go first.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Raise your hand immediately or fill out a form
before
and go, I'm ready to go first.
Okay.
And cool. I'll remember.
Okay. Amazing. Awesome. I also just heard about the Clifton Strengths Test.
Yep.
I had never heard of it, but I was like totally, I'm fascinated by those kinds of things, like the psychology of like how they're designed. And so I'm going to take that too.
The Clifton Strengths, and another one is the Kolbe, K-O-L-B-E, worth the $50. Fascinating. Really? I love all of that. Really? I don't think I've ever not taken a type test. Yep.
Wow. Wait, do you like the Kolbe more than the Clifton Strengths?
I think you get things out of both of them. I think you get things out of every typing test. Not every typing test is the whole of you. It just allows you to kind of consider different things, different patterns that the tests are noticing in you. Mm. So I feel like the more I take, the more just little layers of the onion pieces of the puzzle I'm putting together.
Yeah.
They're both really good. They both do very different. They're both looking at different things. Mm. Not going to be like, oh, well, I did both and got the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I ask you guys also your advice on something that is like, feels stupid, but it's important, I suppose. But it's like, okay, this article about the theatrical release of the movie that I did a long time ago, I like don't have as big a role in it either, but that came out last week and I didn't post about it because I'm just slow about that stuff. But then this article came out today and I'm like, I feel like I need to like tell people about both, but I'm like, do I post that one, the one that came out last week first and then the one that came out today? Or should I post the one that came out today first and then that one later?
Yeah.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
The one that came out today.
Go with the boss.
Yeah. Just go with, because that's where your energy is. Like, then go, oh, and, you know, today not first. To hog the front page of Deadline, but... I'm also in this. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Take like a little screenshot of something that you could then use for the image or whatever. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
It doesn't. So the answer from the big picture perspective, it does not matter like what order you do things in. It doesn't matter if something came out 2 months ago and you're just mentioning it now. Don't concern yourself with that at all because people aren't paying attention to those details of the timeline. All you're doing when you're posting is going, June is working. June is an actress and she is working. You're connecting those synapses in people's minds. Mm. June's working. June's working. They're not even paying attention to what you're doing, but they are getting the message. June's working. June's working. June's working.
Yeah.
That's why you want to post. So it doesn't matter the timeline.
All right. Thank you. That's really good to hear. Cause I definitely get caught up on like the timeliness of things. And then I'm like, it's too late if it's like far enough away, but
no, never too late. And you can mention one project. I booked it. Can't tell you about it yet, but I booked it. I'm on set. Just wrapped. Oh, it's the premiere date is this time. I'm at the premiere. Now it's streaming. Now it's on, like, you can milk it for every stage that it goes through. People aren't paying attention, but what they'll absorb kind of unconsciously is, oh my God, that girl's like all over the place all the time, working, working, working. They're not registering, oh, she's talking about the exact same project.
Okay, cool.
Yep. Good job, you. Right.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I've missed you. It's really great to be back in the space you create.
Yay!
And congrats.
Thank you to everybody. And yes, it's a pleasure to have you here. And I expect to see you back soon with lists.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to start right now.
Okay. All right, guys. Take care. See you next time.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Sarah.